We're almost there at stage 19 of the Tour de France. I can see Paris on the horizon. I'm drawn ever closer. Let's cue that intro.
The big question is this: how do we use cycling as a tool to improve our health, our happiness, and our longevity? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Anthony Walsh, and welcome to the Roadman Podcast.
Roadman, it's stage 19 of the Tour de France, and as I said in the intro, we are almost there. My legs are killing me, my back is killing me from the chair. We've all had our trials and tribulations to get through these 3 weeks. Today was drama before the off. We had Zeman, a name not familiar to you, but he's the Dave Brailsford version, the Jumbo Visma version of Dave Brailsford. He is their director sportif. Essentially your manager, and he's been kicked off the Tour de France for, the UCI have said, assaulting and intimidating a UCI employee. Now, if we look around and see what's coming out of the Tour from riders, you know, a little bit of gossip, a little bit of a DM here, it's very much the case that this UCI official was heavy-handed and a little bit of a prick, to be honest. He came to Roglic's bike after the end of the stage to check it for motors. And he was basically looking to, he's not a pro bike mechanic, he's definitely not Roglic's bike mechanic. He was looking to wrench away at Roglic's bike mechanic, or Roglic's bike, and start taking parts off it. He's heavy handed. This is the bike that he's trusting to bring him to the Tour de France. And this ape is just pulling away at it. And, you know, your man Zeman just wasn't happy. And apparently he made a number of representations to say he wasn't happy with someone not qualified taking the bike apart. There had to be more protocol. And, you know, they had a little bit of a, French would say, a tête de la tête. And it resulted in Zeman being kicked off the Tour de France. That is one of a number of things today that I'm going to get stuck into, because for a transition stage, it was actually a very exciting stage. So before we dive into all that, let me just give you a little nudge over to Patreon.com. Patreon, if you're enjoying this Tour de France and you want to say thanks for the commentary, if you're getting a little bit more, if it's bringing you a little deeper level of understanding of the Tour, the tactics, the nuances, buy me a coffee, buy me a beer to say thanks. And the way you can do that's over on Patreon. It's a small amount of cash for you. It's a token amount of cash. With pubs and coffee shops, you know, not back to functioning normally, none of us are actually have the same expenditure anyway. So you'll hardly notice it coming out of the poker. But for me, we really will notice it here at the Roadman Podcast, because it is the difference between life and death. So head on over to patreon.com/Anthony_Walsh. That's where you support the podcast. Sagan, we've spoke about him as the great slave master, the hardest man in the world to work for. You thought your boss in McDonald's was, you had a tough man. If Sagan is your boss, you work every day, you strap on that cycling kit. He put the boys to work again on the front today, and I couldn't believe it after the tough few mountain stages and his outside chance to persevere with this. We cover 55 kilometers in the first hour of racing. Let that sink in. 55 kilometers in the first hour of racing. Insane. As Sagan's troops just smashed the race to bits again. Sagan, he was bested by the man from Carrick-on-Shore yet again, with Sam Bennett taking the points at the intermediate sprint. And Bennett's wrapped up this green jersey, in my opinion. I don't know if he's mathematically wrapped it up, because the stage panned out with Bennett and Sagan coming for minor placings and Bennett beating Sagan. It's not mathematically a certainty from my calculation, which is doesn't sound massive, because you're going, oh, well, he's still going to win it anyway. But what it does is it reduces Bennett's chances of winning in Paris. And Paris, if you're a first-time viewer of Tour de France, we call it the Sprinters World Championships. It's the biggest day on the cycling calendar for sprinters every year, the Champs-Élysées. It's iconic, and it's what every sprinter dreams of. It's arguably as iconic as winning the green jersey itself. And Bennett would have really fancied that sprint. It suits him. It's a tough sprint. It's a sketchy sprint. It suits him. It suits him down. But if you're watching yourself and you're worried about crashing because you need to finish, you need to secure some point to wrap up that green jersey, that means you're in a risk-averse mindset. And a risk-averse mindset is not the friend of a sprinter who, you know, if you know any sprinters, they're typically not really, they don't have the same risk profile as the rest of us. To go through those gaps at that speed, at that contact, you need a couple of screws loose, and the best sprinters in the world have it. Bennett has it in spades. It's what makes him the best. But if you switch that off and you start going into preservation mode, thinking about that green jersey, that is when you have a lot of trouble. So I'm actually not backing Bennett for that final sprint on Sunday in Paris. I think it's going to be Caleb. I think Bennett's just going to be too caught up on that green jersey, which he has wrapped up now, which is a monumental day for Ireland, Irish cycling. Martin O'Loughlin, who coached Sam all the way up, big shout out to him. He used to coach me as well. There's a lot of people involved in Sam coming up, Sean Kelly and on Post Chain Reaction. You know, it's a big win for a lot of people, and you know, Bennett, he's a super nice lad, and hopefully we get him on the podcast post Tour de France. Super nice lad, and delighted for him finally coming of age. And it hasn't been easy to struggle. You see these things and you think it's an overnight success, and I had a lot of friends who were teammates with Bennett at his on post days, and he was so close to quitting so many times, and he was stuck. Cycling is basically categorised into Division 1, Division 2, Division 3, with on post being a continental level, which is Division 3, and Bennett now was at Division 1. He was stuck at Division 3 for a long, long time, and a lot of times he was very, very close to walking away and jacking it all in with injury, sickness, or just sort of disillusionment. And it took one or two real breakthrough moments, a stage win in the Tour of Britain, and it was just these small moments, and honestly, it was probably hundreds of signs that said quit, and he kept going forward. So absolute admiration for the man for that. We had a tragic abandon today with Potzelberger, one of Sagan's teammates, and he got stung by a bee in the mouth. And if you look on YouTube, the footage of this, it's horrific. It's like he's after getting shot by a sniper. He's in a bad way. He gets that, you know, the swelling of the throat passage, and he can barely breathe. He was ruined. So he's abandoned the Tour de France. Well, basically, the Tour de France is just about complete for these sort of guys, because they'll cruise up the TT tomorrow. And then into Paris is basically a rest day with a sprint at the end, where they'll drink champagne, put on goofy wigs and do wheelies and have the crack on the way into Paris. Yeah, but Potzelberger's out. That's, I gutted to hear that today, because you know, you get so close to the Tour de France and it's, or to Tour de France final, and to drop out like that, it's pretty heartbreaking. Today, we didn't have the break going. It was a break of 12 in the end, and we didn't have it going until 27 kilometers to go in the stage. And then when we did have it, it was very much a fast man marking out of each other. We had some big rollers, classics guys, and then the fast men. We had the likes of Luke Rowe, Trentin, who's toured in the points jersey classification, Sagan, Mezcek, Bennett, Soren Kroon, Anderson, Van Avermaet. Yeah, they were all in there. And what we seen was Bennett just absolutely glued to Sagan's wheel. He just stuck on Sagan's wheel. I'd say Patrick Lefebvre, his manager, was in his ear saying, just do not lose Sagan's wheel. He just shattered him. I'd say it was very frustrating for Sagan, and maybe I've created this, but I just feel like there's no love lost between them two. You very infrequently see them exchanging any sort of pleasantries, and considering they were teammates for the last few years, you would expect some amount of pleasantries, and we don't see it, so I don't think they're good mates. That would have infuriated Sagan today, that Bennett just glued to him. And Bennett's stronger at the moment. He's able to climb, not as well as him, but he's able to go up those ramps without getting dropped, and he's faster. He's faster in the intermediate, and he's faster in the finish. It's a great win for the Carrick man. Sagan really paid. If we think back across the Tour de France, I'm in reflective mode here. A bit of a somber reflection, but Sagan paid for that relegation. And we spoke about that, and as much as the romantic traditionalist side of me wants to protest and say he didn't deserve that relegation, that there should be a place for that sort of contact, we covered this, and it's the, you know, it's the Jakobsen effect after that horrific crash that Jakobsen's still recovering from, and you're not going to get away with contact. And because of that, Sagan was relegated. Because of that, he scored 0 points on the day, on a day when Bennett scored 45 points. That's been it. That's been the momentum shift. We talk all the time about that momentum. She's a cruel beast, and momentum shifted that day in favour of Bennett, and Sagan hasn't got it back. We had Soren Anderson today, and he is the story. Cervelo, Sunweb, whatever they're calling themselves these days, Sunweb have been the story of this Tour de France in many ways. They took 3 stage wins. We've Hershey, a big breakout rider, former under 23 world champion, who's been massively impressive. We've Anderson today taking his second stage win. And it goes to show you like, I remember having a conversation with a teammate of mine a couple of years ago about how to get into the break. And it's like, when you're absolutely in the red, when you can't breathe, when you've lactate coming out your eyeballs and you think you're going to get dropped, if you want to get into the break, that's the moment you got to attack, because everyone else is hoping. If your internal dialogue is saying, I hope no one attacks at this moment, that's when you have to attack full gas with everything you have. And if you listen to Anderson's post-race interview, that's exactly what he says. He said, following the Trentin attack, he was in the red. And he decided to go anyway, because that's what cycling is, such a barbaric sport. We talk about this all the time. It's barbaric from the crashes and having to endure the pain, the weather. But this is how you get a breakaway. It looks easy on TV, but you go out in your next local club ride or training spin, ride as hard as you can up a hill, full gas up the hill until you've lactate coming out your eyes. And that's the moment when it attacks. Like this idea of the quote that fatigue makes cowards of us all. Fatigue makes cowards of us all. It's really true, and you really see who the good riders are when you're fatigued beyond fatigue, when the, you know, your decision making is impaired, when your legs are just screaming to stop and it feels like someone has your head underwater and you can't breathe. That's the moment to go. That's the moment to dig in. He timed it perfectly, and what we seen was the group behind with some of the best riders in the world, Van Avermaet, Trentin, Sagan. When you see these guys behind, they're not going to cooperate. Ego gets in the way. They all look at each other going, well, I'm not doing the work. Why should I do the work? You do the work. And they can't get organized. And that's all you need. That's all Anderson needed. Because when you get that 10, 15 seconds, it's so, so difficult to get a group of superstars like that organized into a rotating pace line to get you back. The only hope of getting caught is teammates. If those stars all had one or two teammates each, you might get the teammates, the like lieutenants, cooperating. But to get a collaboration between the top guys like that, it's very, very difficult. So he timed that perfectly, and you see he just rides this beautifully consistent tempo right on the edge, you know, VO2 max power way above threshold, but it's consistent. He doesn't stop. It's constant power distribution all the way out, where the group behind, they surge and they stop and they surge and they stop, and that's how they lose time. What was funny was Anderson's radio wasn't working, so he was like a kilometer to go and I think he still had a minute, and he was full gas pinning it, shouting at the radio or the TV camera motorbike for a time check. That could have ended in tears. You know, I've seen it many, many times. If you want a brilliant piece of TV, best finish to a bike race I've ever seen, do a YouTube search for Ilio Coisa Tour of Turkey finish, and you'll see the best finish to a bike race you've ever seen. But it shows you what can happen if you push too hard in the final. You're taking chances, and you can slide out on a corner, you can easily touch a pedal, crash, and you don't need to take those chances with a minute gap. So it didn't work out bad for him. As it happened, he just finished with a bigger margin. But you would typically, if you have a margin like that, start easing off so you don't take those chances. It's pretty cool to see the peloton just cruising in, and the reason we see the peloton cruising in is, if you're new to cycling, you'll often wonder, go, oh well, Pogacar is, you know, he's only 57 seconds down, will he not attack? And no, he won't attack on a finish coming in like that, because it's all about energy conservation. And it's anytime you expend energy, you want to ask yourself, okay, is there a chance I can benefit from this expenditure of energy? And what's the probability of me benefiting? What's the likely benefit I'm going to get? Like, how big a time gap am I going to get? And what are the chances of me getting that time gap? So on a flat finish like that, Pogacar could go full gas, expend a load of energy. Jumbo just put 3-4 guys on the front and easily close it down. So he's wasted a shit ton of energy. Very little chance of him getting a big gain. So it just makes no sense for him to do it. So that's why we typically see this just agreement and a neutralization where guys just ride in across the line easy. There's so much for the terrain on the day just meant there's so much firepower left in the peloton that the firepower just neutralizes itself. We have it all to play for still. Tomorrow's mountain stage is absolutely epic. It's stage 20. It's 36.2 kilometers from Lure to La Planche de Belfie. La Planche de Belfie, it's a category 1 climb. It's 5.9 kilometers long at 8.5% average. But we have pitches up over 20% on La Planche de Belfie. We've seen it in the last few years. It's an epically hard climb. But we have the tour title up for grabs. We've Roglic, Pogacar, Lopez. The big one is Roglic Pogacar. Pogacar is a very, very good time trialer. This could go right to the wire. I don't think it's the nail biter I had talked about, where if Pogacar was getting 10 seconds here, 20 seconds there, I don't see him beating Roglic by more than 30 seconds. And if I'm honest, I see Roglic taking the stage. But a mechanical, a puncture, it's all up to play. The King of the Mountains is super interesting because they're actually using a Strava segment from the bottom of La Planche de Belfie to the top of the Planche de Belfie. So it's not the whole time trial that awards points for the mountain classification. So the mountain classification gives points for first over the top of a mountain. But on a time trial, it's the time from the bottom of the climb to the top of the climb. And whoever covers that the fastest gets awarded the maximum amount of points. So Carapaz from Ineos and Pogacar are neck and neck in the King of the Mountains contest. But Carapaz is not riding the general classification. He's way down. So what that means is it's a 36-kilometre time trial, but only a 5-kilometre climb. So Carapaz can ride the first 25 kilometres and just cruise into the bottom of the climb fresh and then go full gas on the climb to get those points, to get the fastest time he can on the climb, discarding the first half of the stage. Whereas Pogacar has to ride, you know, threshold and above for the entire 36 kilometres because he needs the time for the overall. So, you know what, I think Carapaz is going to take the King of the Mountains, and the white jersey for a young rider is still up for grabs as well. I think cycling is the only sport in the world where a young rider is 25. You know, in soccer at 22, you're nearly past it. And cycling, you know, it's 25, still the young rider, which is cool to see. Today's stage finished out anyway with Anderson solo victory, epic. Mezgetz winning the bunch sprint for second, or the break sprint for second, and Jasper Stuyven bringing it up for third. Guys, we're inside of Paris. We're almost there. Tomorrow is the big day. Tomorrow's the day. You want to be catching the tail end of the time trial, so they go off in reverse general classification order. So you're going to see Roglic off last, Pogacar off second last, Lopez off third last. You want to be catching the last 5-6 guys. That's where all the drama is going to happen. You don't need to sit and watch it all day. That's it for this stage review, folks, of the Roadman podcast. Before you head off for your ride, before you head off for your back to work, I would encourage you to jump on over to patreon.com, make that small little donation, buy me a pint of beer, buy me a coffee, just say chapeau, thanks for the Tour de France, well done. Guys, I'll see you on the road. Ride safe out there, road men.